Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
I want to play some audio for you guys. This is Jamal Mashburn. This is him talking about Darren Peterson.
I think the interesting part is with this NIL era and the transfer portal, this has become much more transactional than we really thought about. From the standpoint that we can't separate the conversation of them winning a championship and him going to the NBA because it's a transition year for him. At the end of the day, if he can go straight from high school and go to the pros, he probably would have done it at the end. I mean, that's how I see it.
Yeah.
So they really need him to win a championship. But if he's going to get in the NCAA tournament and you're going to load manage that part of it,
it's wild.
Why even be a part of it at that point?
So that is Jamal Mashburn. He was on TNT. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Matt Tate. He is with R1S1 Sports covering the Kansas Jayhawks. Matt, I would love to just have you on here, and it's just a peaceful time with the Kansas Jayhawks. I know they won yesterday, but we have another edition of your favorite soap opera, What's Going On with Darren Peterson. Appreciate you coming on today, my man.
Of course, man. Sometime we'll just have to call and talk about not even KU, just maybe, you know, how you're doing. I'd like to check in on you, but unfortunately – right now, Darren Peterson is a little more important in the eyes of KU fans than you. A little more, I said, not a lot.
100%. So let's just start with this. I mean, a very simple question. What do you think happened yesterday? Because this is what it looked like to me. Peterson is hooping. He is having an incredible game. It looks like he could go for 40 yesterday. He then hit one shot. It looked like he then looked at his coach and said, I'm done for the rest of the day. Bill subs him out. And you could just tell from his body language, his energy, that he was done playing basketball yesterday. What did you see is my, I guess, opinion on it? Is my read on that correct?
Yeah, it looks exactly like that. And you know, I'll go one further, man. It looks exactly like we've seen all year. And see, that's sort of where I land today. You know, because, yeah, there's Stephen A. and Jamal Mashburn and Jalen Rose and Seth Davis and whoever, all these national guys that are up in arms in their studio shows or whatever about last night, about wanting to know what's going on. And I'll tell you what's going on, the same thing that we've seen and talked about all year. And I hesitate to say this, although I wrote it and it'll be up on the site later, but I really struggle with all the complaining about it because – let's be honest, man. Maybe it's worked. They're 20-6. They're ranked eighth. They're a game back in the Big 12 race, the baddest, biggest conference in the history of conferences, right? I mean, the team, the Darren's teammates, they don't seem bothered by this in the least. I'm sure there's some frustration that we don't see. I'm sure that exists with the coaching staff. I'm sure that on certain days, maybe even some of his teammates, but what I see is a team that is like, if he's with us, cool. If he's not, cool. We're going to play the same way, and we're going to go attack it, and we're going to go beat Kansas. And I don't see them cold-shouldering him. I don't see them not welcoming him back when he's out there. I see him engaged with his teammates post-game, on the bench, when he is playing. I mean, I think this is a very, very – for lack of a better word, healthy relationship for everybody but the fans. And I understand that the fans matter, and I understand that the fans are frustrated, and I sympathize with the fans, man. I do. If this was my team, look, my team is the Denver Broncos, and when I went out to Denver to watch the AFC Championship game in the snow, and I had to watch Jarrett Stidham instead of Bo Nix, it was not as much fun, period. So I do understand the frustration from the fans, but if you're looking at it just from – has this been a success or a failure? It's been this way all year, and Kansas is in a damn good spot. So that's where I land today, because I think people are really struggling with what to make of it and how mad to be and what's going to happen. And I think the bottom line is nobody knows what's going to happen. We just have to let it play out. And if he plays, he plays. And if he doesn't, he doesn't. But I don't see it as some huge distraction. I don't see it as some, you know, major, major deal that the whole country has to talk about. I get why they are, but I think Kansas is fine.
I guess this would be, I guess, my counter to that. And I'm with you. This is a very good basketball team. I think you could point at their games away from Allen Fieldhouse, and you can really see the difference in having good Darren Peterson and not Darren Peterson. He didn't play in the game against Duke. They lost. He didn't play in the UConn game. They lost. He missed the Arizona game when they were at home. He didn't practice. They then go on the road against Iowa State. He is clearly off. They get blown out. He is engaged in the Texas Tech game. They win that game because he is there. I don't have any issues about Kansas when they are the home team, but we know this. I mean, very soon, you're not going to have the protection of Allen Fieldhouse. You're going to have to beat some really good teams in neutral sites or in the NCAA tournament. Man, it's really hard to do that if you don't know if your best player is going to play in the second half of these games.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. And you know, even more so, I think that's why he won't win it, but that's why Bill Self should be in the mix for Coach of the Year, because he is managing this. I'm not saying when he's at the podium, I know that people have issue with how he's communicated this or what he said or when he said it or all that, and that's fine. I mean, people can have their opinions about all that. But as far as getting this team with the uncertainty surrounding Peterson and having him some nights and not having him on others and then having him some of the time some nights and then not the rest, I mean, this dude has done an amazing job of keeping this team locked in, and I think he deserves credit for it. I think the staff deserves credit for it, but I'd give the lion's share of the credit to the players, man. I mean, these dudes are just wired to just go out and hoop, and they just want to play hard, and they don't care. They're not stupid. They know that their team is better, and the long-term potential is certainly better when Darren's out there and playing, and you know, the potential to go get 30 or 40 any given night. As we saw last night, he was well on his way to that, but I also don't think that they're this is where the fact that there's a lot of veterans, I mean, hungry dudes that have, you know, reached the end of their rope, like Trey White and Melvin Council, and even El Marco Jackson is a veteran in a sense, even though he's just a redshirt sophomore. But he had the game taken away from him because of injury, and Taylor did too, in a sense. So, you know, these guys, they just want to go out and play, and they want to play hard, and they want to represent Kansas, and they want to play for each other, and they want to play for themselves. I mean, this is one of the things I wrote last night about that game. I mean, you saw it when Darren was in there, and you even saw it when he wasn't. This team is so connected, man. They are so connected. Everything's crisp. Everything's sharp. They play for each other. They play hard across the board. There doesn't ever appear to be, you know, one weak link. That doesn't mean they're perfect possessions and flawless at all times. But I mean, I think as far as what they are, their identity and how they play and why they play, I think this team is really connected. And maybe we're comparing them too much to the last couple of teams that weren't as connected, that didn't have that fight, that didn't live up to the Kansas standard quite as much. So you know, there's maybe that's some recency bias a little bit there, but yeah, I mean, everybody understands that this team is better in terms of their biggest goals with Darren out there, and so I understand that that's the bulk of the frustration. It's not that he didn't play last night in the second half in a game they won easily. It's the fact that every time this happens, people go, uh-oh, let's say we're in St. Louis and it's the second round and we're playing a pretty good team in that second round as a two or a three seed, whatever that would end up being. Is he going to check out of the second half? And is that going to cost us? And it very well might. I mean, there's nobody, including maybe Darren, that could tell us that won't happen. But I think that until it does, you just have to kind of accept it as it is what it is. And you can look for answers and you can demand news and you can talk for hours about why this is wrong and why it's needing to change and all that. But I think this is very, very unique to this situation. I think Darren Peterson is affected, whether it's just in his head or in his brain or mentally or whatever, by any little tweak that he feels. And at this point, he's having a hard time, I think, even playing through a hangnail, just because it gets in his head so much that I don't feel right. I don't feel right. And we've talked about this all year. If I'm not right, I'm not ready. And so any little thing or big thing that is an affliction, he feels it. And he just decides that's it. I'm good. And again, I don't know that. I haven't talked to him. He hasn't flat out answered that as much as maybe we would like. We haven't had a ton of opportunities to talk to him, you know? And so this is all speculation, but it certainly looks like that's what's happening.
Matt, it's funny because we're talking about what's wrong with KU, and I put wrong in quotes. You guys could be K-State, and that would be even worse.
We talked about that last time. I think that's how we ended my segment last time with you. We could be talking about Jerome Tang and K-State. So there's perspective there. There's no doubt about it. And that's part of it, right? This isn't K-State. This is Kansas. And fans expect to win the national title every year. Doesn't matter who's on the roster. So they're invested. They're invested from minute one. They're going to be passionate. They're going to care. They're going to criticize a 20-point win because it should have been a 30-point win. I mean, that is what Kansas basketball is about and always has been. And so part of that, you have to tip your cap to the fans for it because they're such a big part of what the Kansas basketball brand is. But for their sake, for the individuals, for the moms and the dads and the students and the 80-year-old grandfathers and all these people who are so invested in their program, for their sake, I wish you would just sit back and say, let's see if he plays tonight. And if he does, cool. I'll enjoy watching it. And if he doesn't, oh, well, let's see what happens with the rest of the fellas, because those dudes can play. And I also am a big believer in, you know, I'm a half full guy. People have accused me of that for a long, long time. Sunshine and rainbows and all that stuff, and I'd rather go out that way than any other way. So take this with a grain of salt, but I am a big believer in the fact that he got 23 points to the bottom line last night, right? And so maybe he didn't play in the second half. Maybe he doesn't play a lot of second halves. Maybe he checks out at the end of some of these games. But when he does, he's usually put up 16, 18, 20-plus points. And, man, you'll take that, won't you? I think everybody would.
That is Matt Tate joining us on the show today. He covers the Kansas Jayhawks with R1S1 Sports. Matt, I would like to say that I hope we don't talk to you for a couple of weeks, because if we don't talk to you for a couple of weeks, that means that everything is going fine with Kansas basketball. They got a big game coming up on Monday against Houston. They go on the road next Saturday to Arizona. So they got big games. I certainly hope that Darren Peterson's availability is not the top story, but something tells me that it's going to be.
Yeah, I would imagine I'll pencil you in for next week. And look, I'll miss you if we don't talk, man. So let's put our Darren Peterson-ness aside, and let's just say let's talk next week.
Let's do that. That's our guy Matt Tate joining us on the show today. Matt, I appreciate you, my man.
Of course. Thanks, C-Dot. Take care.
Absolutely. That's Matt Tate joining us on the show from R1S1 Sports. Rob, I will say this. Now, I don't know if this is copious. I don't know what it is. I do think a lot of the noise about the Darren Peterson situation seems to be coming from outside the house than inside the house. You guys don't really seem that worried about it as KU people. A lot of the noise is from Bruce Pearl and from Jamal Mashburn and Stephen A. Smith. It doesn't really feel like it's a lot of Kansas basketball people that really seem too concerned, and they feel like they have a good hold on this thing and know how to manage it. Is that incorrect to think?
I understand where that you come from with that thought, but I think there is a lot of noise from inside the house, at least with fans. I think fans are starting to grow a little bit more and more discontent with the situation, but you're right. You don't have the story in The Athletic, an anonymous player said blank about this. You don't even have Bill Self even like quasi calling him out in the media. It just feels like everyone inside the program is, this is what happens, this is what we do, we're on to the next. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of smoke around the fire, at least inside the building.
I would also say maybe this is part of it too. And maybe this is like the ability of like looking at it from the outside than the inside. I think all the rest of us kind of know how this is going to end. And KU fans are not feeling that way. Hey, you know, we're better without Darren. We manage it so well. Man, I don't know how you manage on the road in the NCAA tournament. Second round, you're playing a really talented team that there's not a big talent gap between you and them. Darren Peterson is only going to play 19 minutes and the crowd is turning against you because they want to see the upset. I just feel like maybe what is happening here is the rest of us seem to know how this story is going to end. And I don't know how well it ends for Kansas if you don't get a hold on this thing with Darren.
I think one of the reasons why KU fans, and I don't want to speak for every fan here, is maybe holding on a little hope of, hey, if we only have Darren for 18 minutes in a, you know, postseason game, so be it. We'll take that. Is because they're beating good teams right now. Like, Oklahoma State was bad, but Oklahoma State's what? Oklahoma State's Missouri. They're an 11.
Yeah, they're fine.
They're a Dayton team. You went on the road, you handle business. You played a half without Darren Peterson against BYU. BYU is a 6 seed right now in bracketology.
Arizona.
You beat them. Arizona. Like, yes, you lost to Iowa State in Hilton. That happens. That's losing to a 2 seed in the Sweet 16. You also gave Duke everything they wanted when you didn't have Darren for any time. You gave UConn all they wanted when you for what they wanted when you didn't have Darren for any time. I think you're right. People outside the building know how it's going to end, and I kind of feel the same way. But I think KU fans do what fans do. They've deluded themselves in believing, hey, we're winning games without him, so let's just ride the wave. I do think with or without him, it's a Sweet 16 team, and let's just see what happens from there.
I want to play this audio for you guys. Let's switch gears for a little bit. This is Mike Tannenbaum. He currently works for ESPN. He used to be the Jets general manager. Now he gives opinions on ESPN. He believes that the Chiefs should move on from Travis Kelce.
I would move on from Travis Kelce, and let me tell you why. When you're in the front office, you have to project what a player is going to do, not what they've done. I've made that mistake countless times in my career, and Travis Kelce is a first ballot Hall of Famer. But when you watch him and make an honest and sober evaluation of his 2025 performance, clearly his best days are behind him. We talked about their lack of explosive plays. If I was Kansas City, I would make the right, albeit difficult decision, move on from Travis Kelce, try to get younger, faster, more explosive at the tight end position.
I saw a lot of people cooking Mike Tannenbaum for this opinion. Now, maybe this is not an opinion that I should share. This is kind of what I've been saying. Now, maybe I shouldn't share it because, you know, that saying like you are the company you keep, and you're telling me I'm on the same side of former Jets general manager. Like, maybe that's the wrong side to be on. Maybe I should be on Brett Veach's side. Maybe I should be on Andy Reid's side of the conversation and not Mike Tannenbaum's side of the conversation. What Mike Tannenbaum just said is almost literally the same thing I've been saying about Travis Kelce. He just said it with a much bigger paycheck and a much nicer wardrobe than I said it. But that's what I've been saying. Get younger, get cheaper, get more explosive, make a difficult decision, move on from Travis Kelce. That's what I've been saying about Travis Kelce. I mean, I might end up being wrong about this, but this is quite literally the same take that I've been giving.
I don't want to say I 100% agree with you. Like, I wouldn't be upset if Travis Kelce returned to Kansas City. I do think they should start to look at life elsewhere, start to look at life outside of Travis Kelce, start to get more younger, start to get more explosive. Like, I'm on your side in that capacity, but I also
feel like...
Let me
ask you this, and I'm sorry to cut you off. Let me ask you this. This popped in my mind. Given the circumstance and situation around Rashee Rice, if Travis Kelce comes back, do you see a scenario in which he's not your number one again next season?
No.
Like right now that we are painting it out, and I'm saying we are having this conversation now in February. Now, we don't know what the NFL draft is. Maybe with the 9th overall pick, they take a wide receiver, and now just optimism is through the roof. But if you don't think they're going to really break the bank at wide receiver, I also don't think they're going to break the bank at wide receiver. We also really have no clue what's going to happen with Rashee Rice. I'm just saying is, I guess part of me is just trying to wrap my mind around they are going to go into another season where their best offensive and most reliable offensive weapon is a declining 37-year-old pass catcher. I just think there's a ceiling on what your offense can be if that's the case. Now, let's see what they do at running back. Let's see who they go get at running back. But Rob, let's say the Chiefs do what you want them to do. You don't want them to go get Breece Hall. You don't want them to spend the 9th overall pick on Jeremiah Love. You want them to go get a pass rusher with the 9th pick. Tell me a scenario heading into 2026 with Kenneth Gainwell as your running back, a 5th round pick at running back, Travis Kelce, Rashee Rice, in which Travis Kelce's not getting 100 targets next year. I just think that one of the problems in their offense is lack of big play ability. And that's just going to continue to be the case if your number one offensive weapon just doesn't fit any of those things.
I would love to tell you right now that they are finally going to get away from Travis Kelce being their number one if he returns. Man, we've said that 2 straight years. I remember after heading into last season, so it was after the Chiefs won the Super Bowl with the Niners, I remember we were in the back getting ready for the show, and Speck was talking about, speaking of Darren Peterson, load managing Travis Kelce and not having him be your one. That didn't happen heading in the Eagles Super Bowl. Chiefs get thumped by the Eagles. It's okay. Kelsey's coming back, but hey, so is Rice. They're going to figure that out. They're going to finally, get away from Travis Kelce as option one. That didn't happen this year based on targets or receptions. So I would love to see her and tell you that they're finally going to get away from that. They're finally going to say, hey, we have a true number one. We have a secondary option. Travis, you are an important piece, but not the go-to guy. Similar to how Gronk was in Tampa. There is no evidence to support that is going to happen. So I do fear that Kelsey's fine to come back. I don't want him coming back as option number one, but I don't know if he's going to come back as anything other than option number one.
100%. And that's why I like this text. CDOT, we all agree that he shouldn't be our number one option, but saying we shouldn't bring him back is asinine. Then you have to tell me then if Travis Kelce is coming back, who their number one option is. Because my evidence would be for the last 3 years, we have been having the same conversation about Travis Kelce. Hey, I kind of want his role to diminish. I kind of want it to decline. We've been having that same conversation with Travis Kelce. Who is the person that you are relying on heading into the year to be a 1,000-yard back, a 1,000-yard receiver? If you're telling me right now, oh, I know Rashee Rice is their number one option heading into the season, I would also say that is asinine. If you were telling me that Xavier Worthy is their number one option heading into 2026, I think that is asinine. I'm just simply saying, if you had to crystal ball it right now, who do you think gets the most yards from scrimmage on the 2026 Kansas City Chiefs? Because for the last handful of years, it has been Travis Kelce, who, regardless if you think he's washed, whatever it is, we can certainly use the term diminished. You know he's diminished. So if you want more explosiveness, more big plays, tell me how you do that if your number one pass catching option is diminished. So who do we think that person's going to be? Is it Breece Hall? Is it Mike Evans, who also was coming off a significant foot injury? Who is it? Because I'm saying is what I would do with tight end is I would not bring Travis Kelce back, and I would just spend money on a younger tight end. I would invest in a younger version of a tight end.
Here's where I get stuck,
though. And next year, sorry to cut you off, but like next year what I would do is instead of worrying about the 800, maybe you get 600 yards from a tight end, but you spent $4 million to get that production, and now you go spend the money elsewhere at wide receiver, you spend that money at running back, and you just turn over the cycle. You turn over the cycle.
I agree with that. Here's where I get stuck. Who's that young, up-and-coming, in-his-prime tight end on the market right now? Maybe he's in the draft. The Chiefs draft Travis Kelce in the third round. Maybe that guy exists. I haven't delved into the draft the way I should. We haven't even had the combine yet. But who's that guy on the open market? Do you think it's Kyle Pitts? He might get franchise tag. You might even hit the market. Like, who's that tight end you're talking about? That's also part of the problem. They're going into an offseason where the tight end they plan on returning, or at least we all think they'll plan on returning, is probably the best one available in free agency, because I don't think Kyle Pitts hits true free agency. So then now you're chasing in the draft. It feels like they're in between a rock and a hard place, because what you're saying works conceptually, but when you ask to put it in practice, there's not really a name that fits that category. Who is the $4 million young tight end they can get production out of? I don't know that guy exists right now.
Text line 913-586-7965. A lot of people are arguing that Rashee Rice is their number one option. How many yards do you think Rashee Rice gets this year?
600
to 800. All I'm saying is with Rashee Rice, your number could be anything, and I don't know how anybody you could tell you that you're wrong.
Like, I think over 1,000 would be wrong.
I don't know if that's wrong. Like, if you were telling me right now, you and I both could see a scenario in which Rashee Rice is not suspended for the 2026 season. He puts it together in a contract year and balls out next season. You can't say you'd be stunned if that happened, right? You cannot be stunned if that happened. He settles with his ex. He doesn't get suspended this year. He puts it together at the absolute perfect time for a contract year and goes off and gets paid somewhere. I would not be stunned if that happened. I wouldn't be stunned if he is off the team. So I'm just saying is if we are going into the season now with an expectation that Rashee Rice is going to be your number one option when he literally right now is facing a lawsuit from his ex-girlfriend saying that he abused her, that just doesn't also sound like a good plan to me either. That doesn't sound like a good plan. Like, I would say right now on offense, and it's early on in the process, man, you got significant questions about your top three weapons from last year. And you also don't have a running back on the roster right now. Like, the Chiefs kind of got to get to work in the offseason. I know it's early, but man, you don't have a running back right now on the roster. The only running back you have on the roster right now was a seventh round pick from last year who couldn't get on the field. Your number one wide receiver right now is in the middle of a lawsuit with his ex-girlfriend. Your number two wide receiver was basically hurt all of this past season, and your number one tight end is 37 years old. Like, there's some work that needs to be done in kind of building up the weapons that you have on this offense. Coming up on the other side, we'll keep talking Chiefs. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for K-State Athletics. 96.5, The Fan.
I'm Sarah Austin Jeunesse, The Moth's executive producer and longtime host of The Moth Podcast. Every week, we share true stories told live and without notes by real people from all walks of life. Stories about disastrous haircuts, May-December romances, photographing Pluto, fighting for justice, and so much more. Some stories make you laugh, some make you think, and many stay with you long after they're told. Discover the power of story. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, I understand that this topic, and I just came up with this, honestly, during the break, so this is an impromptu segment. I understand that this goes directly against what I was saying about Mike Evans, and I know that I've been pushing to go get Mike Evans, but, I mean, they're going to need to pick up a veteran. Like, they don't have any veteran wide receiver on their team. They don't have a single wide receiver on their roster that is in their second or third contract. I just don't think they're having all young guys at wide receiver. I don't think that's the best way to do it. Rob, let me ask you this. Text on, let me ask you this. 913-586-7965. How many players right now would you say on the Chiefs that their arrow is pointing up? I'm asking that question, and I understand that some of this is a product of them winning six games last year, and how positive can you be about a team that was just not good, especially the last six, 7 weeks of the season. But right now, on the Chiefs team, we can go through the key guys. How many guys on the Chiefs right now would you say that their arrow is currently pointing up? And the only reason why I asked that question in relation to what we're talking about with Travis Kelce in the audio, if you missed it, here's Mike Tannenbaum.
I would move on from Travis Kelce, and let me tell you why. When you're in the front office, you have to project what a player is going to do, not what they've done. I've made that mistake countless times in my career, and Travis Kelce is a first ballot Hall of Famer. But when you watch him and make an honest and sober evaluation of his 2025 performance, clearly his best days are behind him. We talked about their lack of explosive plays. If I was Kansas City, I would make the right, albeit difficult, decision, move on from Travis Kelce, try to get younger, faster, more explosive at the tight end position.
So we can even split the difference here. I don't think anybody is arguing that Travis Kelce's arrow is pointing up. Now, you might argue, hey, he's still really productive. We want him back. We love him. The numbers suggest last year he's one of the best tight ends in the National Football League. I won't really bite you that hard on it. But we can agree that you cannot argue today, if you brought back Travis Kelce as a free agent, that his arrow is pointing up and you think there is more than what you got from him as a player. I think that's a very fair thing to say. Rob, I've had their depth chart pulled up. We can ask that question right now if you want to go through it. And again, I understand that maybe this is a product of them not being a good team. But I would also argue this is also a product of they don't have many young, profitable players right now, and that's what they need most. That's what they need most. Rob, at quarterback with Patrick Mahomes, I'm not saying his arrow is pointing down, but it's Patrick Mahomes. At running back, right now they only have one running back on their roster. I get it. It's a free agency. They got to add somebody. So they're going to add running backs that I think their arrow is pointing up. But right now they do not have that. We're talking about their pass or their pass catching situation right now. You cannot argue that for Rashee Rice. You cannot argue that for Xavier Worthy. You cannot add that. You cannot say that right now about Jalen Royals. You can't say that about Travis Kelce. There is not a single pass catcher right now you can argue that you are optimistic about right now, and they are trending in the right direction. Not a single one. And I even include Rice and Xavier Worthy, because just last week, Rob, I asked you how many yards do you think Xavier Worthy gets, and you told me you think he gets 700. Then he's a bust. He's a bust then. You spent the first round pick on a guy, you traded up to go get him, and his career high is 700 yards. He's a bust. Offensive line-wise, Simmons?
Yes.
Arrow pointing up?
100%. Okay, I'm with yes.
you. And I would say other guys, you're not worried about Creed Humphrey. You're not worried about Trey Smith. Mm-hmm. Jalen Moore, I would also say uncertain question mark right now. Don't know if you could argue arrow is up. You want to play this game on defense?
It gets worse on defense. But
I'm saying it's because most of the guys you would argue that their arrow is trending up. The argument is we should trade that player or they're a free agent.
Mm-hmm. Because the two that come to mind are McDuffie and Watson,
who are wanting to be traded by fans or are straight up free agents. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else on deep.
So that's why I'm asking the question, because the text line is throwing out names. What about Tyquan Thornton, free agent right now?
Mm-hmm.
And I would agree with you. Tyquan Thornton's arrow is trending in the right direction. He is currently a free agent on this team. That's why when we were talking about the team and the amount of work that they have, I'm not here painting it like I think it's some just dire situation. They're going to be a 4-win team. I'm trying to paint it more of the amount of work that they need in just turning over this roster and getting premium players that you believe in. We can even ask this question a different way. Who are you hopeful for heading into the 2026 season? Because you can't say you're hopeful right now about Rashee Rice. He could be facing charges soon.
I think I don't feel this way, but if a fan said they were excited about Xavier Worthy, I don't think it's the worst answer in the world. I personally don't feel that way, but I could see an argument for Xavier Worthy. Me and you just see it differently. I could see an argument for him. I won't make it, but I think there is an argument to be made about excitement for him. So you could maybe add him to the list.
Text line is saying, someone just said, you can do that with every team. Stop this. I bet you we do the same exercise with Denver and Los Angeles. I do not think you would feel this way. And I know you guys call me Bronco.Chargers. If we go through the Chargers depth chart right now and I ask you how many players on their team do you think their arrow is trending up, I do not think you would say
number.
We are struggling right now to find a player on offense for the Chiefs that is trending up, and the two players are their left tackle who played in 8 games last year. That's the number one answer on the team. So in some of these, I know that you and I have both been kind of pigeonholing, man, they got to go defense. They got to go. Like, what they really need is a really talented 22-year-old on their team. That's what they really, really need. Now, I don't want that player to be at running back, but if you took that player at wide receiver, I could not be mad. If they took Brock Bowers, for example, at tight end, and that's who they're building their offense around, you wouldn't be mad if that player was the Oregon kid, the tight end from there. Like, that's kind of what they need more than anything. They really need a really talented, day one, 22-year-old, instant impact player. They have not had that in 3 years. They have not had a day one come in since Karlaftis, since Trent McDuffie. They have not had that guy day one as a rookie you can count on. He's a starter. He's a really productive player for them at a position that matters.
Simmons, I will continue to say, Josh Simmons plays the most important position on the offensive line.
Yeah, he played for 1 month and then he was gone the second month of the season. He was gone the second month
of the
season.
He's like Darren Peterson, though. When he was on the field, he was productive at a super important position.
I'm just saying, he played 1 month and then he was gone. And we had no clue where he was. And then he was back and then he was gone again. They played 4 months. He missed 2 of the months that they had. So, yeah, yes, if you want to put him on the trending up, sure. This is an interesting exercise, because I would just disagree if you're saying we could do that with all teams. I think we could do that right now in the division, and I don't think you would agree. If we went through Denver, do you think the arrow is pointing up on this player or not? You would look at the Broncos roster and agree. They've drafted in different spots. You feel like the Broncos roster is going to continue to get better. They're going to get better at running back with RJ Harvey. They're going to get better at wide receiver. They're going to get better for some of their players on the defense and players they've been able to build up. The Chiefs, this is a really important offseason in creating cap space to change this and turn over the roster, and also making use of the draft picks that they currently have. Making use of 9, making use of 40. Maybe you trade Trent McDuffie and you add additional draft picks. They need more really talented guys on rookie contracts. They just don't have a lot of those guys currently in the mix right now. They had that, and they've all paid those guys now. Any guy that you liked 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and we were really touting how talented this roster is, they've already made a decision on those players. They paid George Karlaftis. They paid Creed Humphrey. They paid Nick Bolton. They paid Trey Smith. I would say now a problem is we are now reaching what should be the next wave of those guys, and those guys don't seem obviously available. We're having conversations about trading Trent McDuffie. You don't feel comfortable paying Rashee Rice. Absolute uncertainty around Xavier Worthy. They don't have that guy right now that you feel is worth the next big payday. That's who they need to find.
Let me ask you this, though, and maybe the answer is both. Is it draft or development problem? Because the text line is full of people saying, well, about Noel Williams? I would say we didn't see enough of Noel Williams.
I like him.
Maybe it's Rashard Smith. I would say we didn't see enough of him.
Real quick, to go back on Noel Williams, if you want to tell me the arrow's up on Noel Williams, I'm with you. I 100% agree with you.
I would also say he's TBD because he didn't play enough. Like, I think some of the hang-up here is, like, comparing it to the Raiders, the Broncos, the Chargers, I think one of the reasons that you could point to more players trending up is guys that were picked in the second, third, fourth round, and Kansas City, those guys don't play. I don't know if that's Brett Veach's fault. He didn't draft a good enough talent. I don't know if that's Andy Reid's fault. He's not playing the talent. I don't know if it's Spags or what was Matt Nagy, but it's not just first round picks. You mentioned pick 40. Look at the second and third round picks of the Chiefs. They're depth pieces. So I think Ashton Gelati is pointing up, but I don't know if Ashton Gelati is pointing up.
Someone on the text line said, CDOT, there's not one player on the Broncos at wide receiver that you would argue that their arrow is trending up. Troy Franklin last year in his second year had 65 catches for 709 yards and 6 touchdowns. The arrow is trending up on Troy Franklin. The arrow is trending up. The expectation now with Troy Franklin is to take a big step forward if you were them. If I'm the Broncos, I make a big-time trade at wide receiver. I pair him with Troy Franklin. I feel like I got a really good 1-2 going up. At running back, R.J. Harvey, a talented. He didn't have a great year this year, but I like R.J. Harvey for next year. You go pick you up another running back. The Broncos got some young pieces that you like, in my opinion. I don't want to paint it like I think Troy Franklin's some all-pro, but right now, at the age of 23 years old, I'm telling you right now, I'd rather have Troy Franklin than have Xavier Worthy heading into this season. Last year, 65 catches, 700 yards, 6 touchdowns. I'd rather have Troy Franklin than have Xavier Worthy. And he was a fourth-round pick in the exact same draft and was the 102nd pick. So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if this is a fair game to play with the other teams in the division. I understand that those teams did better than Kansas City, so it's a little bit skewed based on what we saw in 2025. But I truly believe that the point remains. This team does not have a lot of players under the age of 25 that you love right now. They used to, and those guys are now in their second contract, and you've paid those guys. What they desperately need is really talented guys on rookie contracts to go out and ball, and they just don't have a lot of those guys currently on their roster. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
I mean, come on, guys. What are we doing here?
On your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
People on the text line are asking a fair question. I asked in the last segment, how many players on the Chiefs would you argue that their arrow is pointing up? We were having a fun, spirited conversation about it. It's good sports talk. I'm always here for it. I made the argument that if you look this up for, and someone on the text line said, you could say this about any team. I don't know if you could say that about the Broncos. I don't know if you could say that about the Chargers. Those are the teams directly in Kansas City's division. I looked up Troy Franklin's numbers, and last year, Troy Franklin had 65 catches for 709 yards and 6 touchdowns. A lot of people on the text line were arguing, how is that a disappointment for Xavier Worthy, but not a disappointment for Troy Franklin? Well, I would say it's all draft positioning. They both were in the exact same draft. Xavier Worthy was the 28th overall pick in that draft class. Troy Franklin was the 102nd pick in that draft class. So, to me, it's just expectations. This would be like Jalen Royals having 700 yards next year. Nobody would come out and say that Jalen Royals is a disappointment next year if he had 700 yards. I would say that is an overwhelming success. I would also say kind of one reason the Chiefs got themselves in this situation is they've never developed a player like Troy Franklin. Think of the guys that they've taken those mid-round swings on. Have they had one of these guys, Rob, probably since DeMarcus Robinson? That they spent a fourth, a fifth round pick on at wide receiver. They've done it at running back, but at wide receiver, that the guy didn't turn out to be a 1,000-yard guy, but he turned out to be a really productive player in the fourth, fifth round. They haven't developed a Troy Franklin. Man, they could really use that kind of guy right now. A guy making no money on a rookie contract, a guy that you probably aren't planning on paying for a second deal, but you're just going to get the most out of it. So as a fourth-year guy, he was on the field a little bit. struggled a little bit, which makes sense. You were a fourth round pick and then really exploded, doubled his catches, doubled his targets, and was more involved in their offense. And there's a reason to think that that guy can continue to develop and get forward. So part of this is obviously you got to take advantage of nine and you got to hit at nine. What they also need to do is, and it seems very obvious, is, man, they could really just use those third and fourth and fifth round picks on offense. And this team kind of built themselves as a dynasty and just getting more for where they're expected to be drafted. You are not expecting to get an all-pro center in the second round. You're not expecting to get a day one starter at right guard in the sixth round. You're not expecting your starting running back in Isaiah Pacheco for the next 4 years to get from the seventh round. They did a really good job of drafting a guy, and if you did a redraft, they would go significantly higher than where they were. The last couple of drafts, I would say it's been the inverse. If you did a redraft of Xavier Worthy, I don't think he goes in the first round. If you do a redraft of Felix Onyedike Uzomah, he is not a first-round pick. They kind of got to go back to finding that value at those key positions in the draft.
I will say, I don't know if this is a defense of the Chiefs or actually an insult to the Chiefs. You ask who's the fourth, fifth, sixth-round guy they found diamond in the rough at wide receiver, and they turned into something. They haven't drafted that position at all. Like, Bink says this all the time on After Hours, and I've heard him say it on other shows, including ours. The Chiefs basically take one shot at wide receiver every draft. They did with Xavier Worthy. That was their one shot. They did with Rashee Rice. That was their one shot. Like, they did last year with Jalen Royals. That was their one shot. Like, the Chiefs don't really draft more than one wideout, so it's hard to have, hey, this fourth-round guy, this fourth-round wideout really turned into a thing. The Chiefs don't draft more than one wideout a draft, so it's impossible to develop a guy that doesn't exist on the roster. Like, they don't do that conceptually.
Yeah, and for example, and someone brings this up, so I got to give someone on the text line the credit for that. I mean, last year, both the Broncos and the Chiefs spent a mid-round pick on a wide receiver. The Chiefs got Jalen Royals, and the Broncos got Pat Bryant. The Broncos got 31 catches for 378 yards and a touchdown from Pat Bryant. The Chiefs got 2 catches for 4 yards from Jalen Royals. That's a significant difference. Pat Bryant didn't have a great year, but as a wide receiver 4 type option, a young guy that you feel some level of excitement heading into, there was a proof of concept with him. One of my frustrations about the end of the season for Kansas City is you have no clue about Breshard Smith heading into 2026 because he didn't get enough snaps, enough opportunities, enough targets. You have no clue about Jalen Royals heading into the season because you never really put him on the field and you never gave him an opportunity. They have a lot of draft picks from last year that we still got major question marks about because they just didn't get on the field or stay on the field long enough.
I 100% agree. It feels like all these things circle back to two things on me. It is the theme of the season in a bad way. Was it drafting or was it development? Because the Chiefs fell short last year, way short, like the shortest. And I don't know if it's the lack of talent on the roster or the fact that none of the talent on the roster developed. We're using wide receiver as the example, but you can kind of point to a lot of position groups and say a lot of the same thing. So I don't know if it's draft or development, but for your point, the Chiefs don't draft Troy Franklin, and when they do draft Troy Franklin, their version of that is Jalen Royals. He's a healthy DMP more often than he's not. Like, I don't know whose fault that is, but they don't have that guy that drafted in the pipeline, and they don't develop him when he shows up in the pipeline. Like, I know I always point to it. Was it Cornell Powell? I mean, he was a fifth-round pick. Anyone know if he's in the league anymore? It doesn't happen in Kansas City.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, if you go back and do a redraft, I think the Simmons goes in the top 10 and Williams is a first round pick. Breshard Smith was clearly the best. Reed didn't play him. You think Josh Simmons goes top 10 in a redraft? Now with our information, like going back and looking at the draft class?
Maybe because positional value. He plays left tackle. I don't know if it's like lock steady top 10, but
I don't think there's a chance.
Think he's close
now going through it. I mean, Cam Ward was like, we can go like through some of the picks.
Cam Ward, I say ahead of him. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at like Colston Loveland, Tyler Warren, Jalen Walker for Atlanta, Emeka Egbuka last year on the team, Jackson Dart last year. Like, we can go to the second round on guys. Nick Emawori was a second round pick last year.
Positional value. You can't preach one offseason to me the Chiefs don't follow positional value, and then they have a left tackle, be like, oh, you can draft that guy anywhere. I think he'll be a top 10
This is
guy.
Where I just think this might be the biggest difference between me and Chiefs fans. I still feel like there is a question mark with Josh Simmons, and it sounds like you think it is a period or a possible exclamation point. And that's where I think I am maybe the biggest difference. I just don't think he was on the field enough last year to maybe come to some of the conclusions that everybody else has come to.
I feel like the Chiefs have their left tackle. Like, you have it a question mark, I have an explanation.
Yeah, let's say you think they have their left tackle. I think they could have their left tackle. He played in 8 games out of the 17 that they have. 8 out of the 17. I'm just saying that's a substantial amount of missed time last year for me to feel so definitive about I know they got their left tackle for the future. I think they could. I think there is a chance, but I want to see Josh Simmons put it all together first. Before I come to that conclusion. And that's why I just think I'm a little bit different. So that's why, at least in this conversation, he still goes in the first round for sure. And he absolutely still goes in the first round because of that positional value. But you're telling me right now, like just based on what we saw in year one, would you rather have Josh Simmons or have Nick Emenwori? And positional value, I'd rather have Nick Emenwori than have Josh Simmons.
I'd rather have the left tackle than the safety. And Nick Emenwori,
I'd rather have that
incredible
safety than have that left tackle.
So if you were the... I'll pick a different team. I went to the Chiefs. If you're a choice between the top left tackle this year and Caleb Downs, you're taking Caleb
Downs? No, I'm talking now in a redraft now that we've seen them both play.
I was cherry picking the best left tackle available versus the best safety available. That's this year's draft versus a redraft. You take the left tackle.
I would agree with you in that. I'm talking about that sight unseen. I'm saying is we saw their first year.
And in 8 games, Josh Simmons was good at a more important position. Okay. Yes, you take him.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. That's where you and I are just different. I don't know if he had a better rookie year than what I saw that kid have. So I don't know in a draft you're telling me that Josh Simmons will go ahead of him. I would say if you think that, it's still solely based off potential and what you think it could be and not based off what we saw. And that's fine. That's part of the redraft conversation. But yeah, what I saw from that kid, he was fantastic in year one. Coming up on the other side, we'll get to college basketball a little bit. We'll get back to Darren Peterson. Ron Artest says he wants to be the next coach at Kansas State. We'll talk about it. Keep it right here. It's The Draft.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.